My name is Brandon Burke. I'm archivist for audio collections at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. And this is the second session of In the Archives. We have three great presentations today detailing preservation programs dealing with institutional sound collections. The first in this series is a program entitled A Brave New World at the National Archives, presented by Kate Murray and Jessica Sims. Since July 2008, Kate Murray is an audiovisual preservation specialist at the National Archives and Records Administration. She's been involved with creating and maintaining digital dynamic media collections since 2001, serving first as the digital projects coordinator at University of Cape Town, South Africa, later as the audiovisual media conservator at Emory University, and more recently as the audiovisual archivist at University of Maryland College Park Libraries. She served as the secretary treasurer of the AIC Electronic Materials Group from 2004 to 2006. Kate received her MLS from University of Cape Town in 2002. She's joined by Jessica Sims. Jessica has been with the National Archives since June of 2008. Prior to working at NARA, she worked for the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum as an audiovisual metadata specialist. She holds an MS in archives management and an MA in history from Simmons College. So with that, I give you Kate and Jessica.
Before we begin our presentation, we'd like to point out that although only two of us will be presenting today, do I need to move? Is this like echoing? Is it just in my head? Okay. the voice is in my head, right? Okay. We'd like to point out that although only two of us are presenting today, there are actually four authors. So we'd like to recognize our colleagues, Ryan Davis and Courtney Egan, who are equal partners in this presentation, although they are being so from the safety of their seats in the audience. During this talk, we're going to give you an update on the Audio-Video Preservation Lab at the U.S. National Archives and Records Administration, otherwise known as NARA or the Archives. As our name suggests, we work with both audio and video formats. We'll focus on our audio side today, but we will refer to our video side as well because there's so much overlap between these two format classes and professional communities. Before we start talking about the nitty-gritty of the AV Preservation Lab, it's important to understand a little bit about NARA and its audio holdings. 2009 is an important year for NARA. It's our 75th anniversary. Congress established the National Archives in 1934 to centralize federal record keeping. Oops. There we go. And on April 1st, 1985, the National Archives and Records Administration became an independent federal agency. A trip to the National Archives building in Washington, D.C., is known internally as A1, is a milestone in the lives of many Americans. I remember one of my own trips 16 years ago when my husband and I had the rotunda almost to ourselves early one morning. The other sole occupant was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, just days before she was sworn in as a Justice of the Supreme Court. She, too, had come to see the Charters of Freedom. It's a memory I treasure because it highlights NARA's fundamental role in the American experience. I visited again with my 5-year-old daughter just this week. The memory I'll treasure from this most recent visit is that now, as a NARA employee, my badge allows me to cut to the front of the line. So this is a different type of American experience, but one I appreciate nonetheless. I would encourage all of you to go, even if you do have to wait. And I can assure you on Monday, the rotunda looked nothing like that. It was swarming with tourists, all about to kill me for cutting the line. While NARA itself has approximately 9 billion pages of textual records, 7.2 million maps, charts, and architectural drawings, more than 20 million still photographs, billions of machine-readable data sets, and more than 365,000 film titles and 111,000 videotapes, the audio collections are actually quite small. The number is somewhat hard to calculate, but is generally thought to be around 300,000 hours. Most of the audio holdings in the Washington region are consolidated in the Special Media Archives Services Division, but it's not unusual for audio objects to pop up in textual or other curatorial units. Of course, there are audio holdings in other units of NARA, including the presidential libraries in the regions. As you might expect, we have a huge variety of formats, including quarter-inch open reel, cassettes, dictabelts, magnabelts, many disc-based formats, wire recordings, as well as many digital file-based formats. If it existed, we probably have it in our collections. We also get digital content on external hard drives and flash drives, but we move those over to network storage and don't keep those physical objects. because NARA's mission is to safeguard and preserve the records of our government for the life of the Republic, our content is pretty predictable. We have lots of speeches, interviews, and oral histories, to be sure, but we also have some more varied content, such as the Voice of America's Music USA Jazz Hour and historic events like the Apollo 11 recordings. It's really something when you thread up a tape and hear, "Houston, we've had a problem, come over your headphones." The Audio-Video Preservation Lab at NARA dates back to the 1950s and 60s, when some staff from the existing Motion Picture Lab realized that audio recordings would soon arrive in great numbers in the archive's holdings, and access to them would be requested by researchers. They began to scrounge for surplus equipment and supplies from around the D.C. area, including from NARA's own short-lived FM radio station, as well as the Voice of America and other local stations. In 1972, a small supply budget was issued, and the first piece of equipment was purchased, which was an Ampex 350 AG, which we still have in our lab today. And we don't use it anymore, and I think it's still there because the paperwork to surplus something in the federal government is really quite amazing, so we just let it sit there. In 1974, Charlie Main came on board, a name many of you may know, and he stayed with NARA until his retirement in early 2007, when Jason Love took over his role as lab supervisor. Video started arriving en masse at NARA somewhere around 1977 or 78, with the USIA, or the United States Information Agency, collection of quad tapes. In the early 1980s, the Audio-Video Preservation Lab moved to the Pickett Street location in Alexandria, Virginia. Pickett Street's conditions were far from ideal, but at least it was a dedicated home. You can also see the approximate locations of Archives 1 and Archives 2 on this map. The lab moved into the College Park Archives 2 facility in 1994, where we still are today. As usual, we're in the basement where most preservation and reformatting labs wind up. Our lab is about a quarter mile from the front door. Down, of course, right. So we've made huge strides in the lab since the lab first started more than 40 years ago. But perhaps the most sweeping changes are occurring right now as we transition from an analog to a digital environment. Today, the Audio-Video Preservation Lab resides in the Special Media Preservation Division, along with labs for photographic materials, microfilm, and motion pictures. Our division's mission is to provide agency-wide laboratory services and technical expertise in order to facilitate preservation and access to the content of the federal records in the custody of NARA. Within the past few years, the Audio-Video Preservation Lab has undergone some major changes. With new staffing levels, new workflows, and a shift towards digital file-based preservation, the AV Lab has had to re-examine how we reformat and preserve our records for the future. The lab's move to digital capture and delivery is part of a much broader division-wide as well as agency-wide initiative. For the most part, NARA is firmly rooted in the analog world. We actually still serve VHS tapes to researchers in the reading room until December 2008, so that's like 5 months ago. The important thing to remember is that NARA is making a firm commitment to move into the digital environment. The AV Preservation Lab is a very active player in this initiative, and in some ways acts as a testbed for other parts of the agency for determining storage needs, automation and batch processing tools, metadata needs, and file naming protocols for large-scale digitization programs and projects. There's no one specific thing that catalyzed the sweeping changes in the AV Preservation Lab, but rather a combination of factors. About 18 months ago, there was a resource explosion, for the lack of a better phrase. For a long time, the lab was severely understaffed, at times down to just two or three people, and most of our equipment was either broken or close to it due to inadequate funding. However, a deadline for the completion of a presidential executive order involving the reformatting of currently classified material for access review enabled upgrading existing staff, as well as hiring four new staff. Moreover, NARA has committed funds for the analog to digital transition, which enabled us to acquire a huge amount of equipment within just a few months. And we'll talk briefly about our equipment a little later. In short, resources expanded exponentially, practically overnight. And yes, 18 months is practically overnight for a government agency. I'll now hand off to Jessica, who will take over from here. Sorry.
All of these new people and tools were creating more digital objects, as well as more complex digital objects than their lab had done before. We quickly realized that we needed to standardize our workflows and find the most advantageous way to use our collective skill sets and tools. Understanding the core functions of our lab and standardizing our products and outputs to satisfy these core functions was an early important step. It allowed us to focus on things we can and should do, while at the same time understand our limitations. Generally, we focus on routine transfers in a production-oriented workflow. Non-typical formats or requests can be accommodated internally, but also may be outsourced. Once we focused on a specific workflow and product, we are able to implement batch processing and other automation workflows to increase production. All audio is digitized at 96 kilohertz, 24-bit, and is saved as a broadcast WAV file onto a shared managed resource. While we no longer store our master preservation files on gold CDRs, we still create 44.1 16-bit Redbook-compliant audio files on CDR, which serve as our access copies for the research room. While we do not retain these low-res files, though, in fact, one of the major projects right now is to upload the master files currently on CDR to server storage, and it's not as easy as it sounds because many of these files were split up over many CDs, so we have to get these stitched back together. Part of the standardization effort was to document all of our processes, and it was well worth the effort. For example, we realized that some of us were normalizing master files, some weren't. Now, no one does this for preservation master copies, but we all do for access copies. Another successful implementation is our round-robin quality control process in which we QC each other's work. Someone else will more likely be able to catch a habitual or random mistake than the person who makes it. Moreover, we use CubeTex Daven to run a basic WAV file integrity check before permanently storing our migrated data. We also use Daven for derivative creation. These layers of review assure high quality and consistent product deliverables and have decreased our turnaround time to hours and days instead of weeks or months. I should say that the same concepts have been applied to the video side of our lab as well. For example, we recently purchased a robotic SAMA system to perform mass migrations of U-matic tape. One of our most fundamental concepts is cross-training. While everyone has specific skills and experience, we've discovered that our lab runs most efficiently when everyone can perform all the basic tasks. Within a day, someone can potentially work with many different formats, varying from a quarter-inch reel audio preservation project to a 16-millimeter film reference request for the reading room. Another important improvement is communication and project management tools. Communication, both within the lab and with our external clients, continues to be a challenge. For example, we have implemented a lab-wide email and phone number that everyone has access to. You'll see this information at the end of our talk. With so many staff working on the same projects, we needed a way to log problems in progress. These seem like very little things, but they've made a huge impact in the daily running of our lab. We also started to track and document all of our work. When the lab was short-staffed and only one individual worked on a project, this was not that complicated. However, when the staff expanded and multiple people were working on a project simultaneously, it became necessary to coordinate our efforts. Our new spreadsheet-based system allows us to track quality control issues as well as preservation actions. Along with the change that has come to our lab, we have a new responsibility over the control of information, including the creation of metadata and file naming conventions. The division recently revamped our managed digital storage to be more responsive to our lab's needs. Sorry. Prior to this, our digital storage was, there's no better way to say this, a mess. There were many file naming conventions, an inconsistent directory structure, an unclear differentiation between access and preservation copies, and no means to determine which files had been QC'd. To help deal with some of these issues, we imposed a hierarchical directory structure for our digital files and developed clear fit-for-purpose guidelines for creating access and preservation files. We are currently investigating the best way to standardize our file names. As some of you may know, successful identifiers for analog collections don't always translate to successful identifiers for digital collections. We are working to find a file naming protocol that will meet our needs within the lab, as well as the needs of the archival curatorial units. I'll briefly talk about our network storage, but caution in advance that this is handled at the division and agency level. So if you have any questions, I most likely won't be able to answer them, but I can put you in touch with someone that can. With that disclaimer out of the way, I can tell you that we use a local 18 terabit NAS, a networked attached storage, for our working space, short-term storage, and to hold lab-specific applications and documents. In addition, each NAS has an LTO3 tape library attached directly to it. Depending on specific criteria, full backups are run at least bi-weekly, and in some instances, with incremental backups running nightly. Files from the NAS are pushed out to the shared SAN, our storage-attached network, which in turn is connected to a LAN. The SAN itself has 185 terabytes of usable storage, and currently 8 of these are used by audio files. As for metadata, we're very close to defining our technical metadata elements for all formats in Special Media Preservation Division, including audio. We've looked at many existing standards and best practices like Sound Directions, AES, and others. We are also very active participants in the federal agency's Digitization Guidelines Group, where we are discussing embedded metadata. We currently use the BEX chunk mostly to embed multiple legacy identifiers, but are investigating other options. It is obvious that we're making many changes within the lab, but we need to make sure these changes complement and work in harmony with other efforts, both within the Special Media Preservation Division and as NARA-wide. For example, we're working with the Electronic Records Archive, or ERA, to ensure that the dynamic media we create can be processed, integrated, accessed, and preserved in these systems. We may be physically in the basement, but our innovations have moved us towards the forefront of our agency. The next few slides provide a glimpse into some of the equipment that we're currently using to accomplish our lab's goals. This list of equipment is by no means the best case scenario or holy grail for which everyone should use as a template for equipment in their labs. These are tools that currently help us meet the criteria for production in our lab, most of which has been in use for a while and will need to be upgraded. Our production tools are always evolving and improving, and there will never be a set it and forget it set of tools for audio preservation and reformatting. Listed on this slide, we have some of our digital audio workstation specifications. On this slide, we've listed some of our playback equipment we use for Groove Discs. And on this slide, we have listed some of our playback equipment for magnetic tape. We've told you a lot about some of the changes we've made so far, but there's still more to come. For example, the Special Media Preservation Division is investigating the feasibility for further alignment based not on format type necessarily, but on workflows. Part of this includes developing shared frameworks across all of the Special Media Preservation labs for ingest, metrics, quality assurance, technical metadata, and job tracking. This also ties into a much larger project known as the Shared Working Environment, which will be a virtual space both for the labs and the curatorial units to work collaboratively. Within the AV Preservation Lab, we continue to examine and refine our processes and hope to learn from the experienced ARS community. We'd like to invite other institutions who are looking at these issues or who are using similar tools to get in touch with us so we can share the load and learn from each other. We'd like to thank our colleagues at NARA for their help and support in preparing this talk, especially Martin Jacobson, Jason Love, Quentin Olson, Dan Rooney, Les Waffen, and all of the Special Media Preservation Division and Preservation Program staff. Thank you.
We have 5 minutes for questions now.
Exactly. Yeah. One of our biggest projects right now is a lot of preservation work was done at vendors in years past, and it was put onto gold CDRs. So that stuff we're uploading. When there's a problem with that gold CDR, we go back to the original master. And the problems that we've encountered so far are there was a huge chunk of them which were cut off, I'm going to say, 5 to 10 seconds before the end of the recording. So we've had to go back and redigitize quite a bit of those. Some of them weren't, they were done at 4416, they weren't done to meet our specs. But in general, we go back as far as possible. And of course, we retain all of our, after we transfer something, unless there's some horrible physical degradation, we obviously retain the original object.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds as though, I mean, it's been about 2 years since I've been out to archives too.
You should come.
Yeah.
And by the way, what we say weeks and days and hours.
They ship me down to Culpeper, so I can't just hop on the shuttle bus anymore. So it sounds as though, I mean, the listening copy you get now significantly better than
hopefully
what you heard a couple of years ago.
Hopefully, yeah.
Not that those were terrible by any means, but.
Right. It should be a lot better, and you'll get it a lot faster. So, yeah, in theory. That's funny. Yeah, it's funny, not funny. But right now you still get a CDR and when you go to the reading room. Eventually everything is going to come out through ERA. You know, that's the party line, that it'll all be served out through ERA. ERA is, for audio and video material, is probably several years down the road. But that's eventually, yes, you will be able to get them streaming from the reading room, at least, maybe from the outside world.
A follow-up question on that. Sorry to cut anybody off. I mean, one of the great things about going into archives, too, and we don't do this at the Library of Congress, but you can leave there with copies of the things that you listen to.
You still can, because most of our stuff does not have copyright issues. Mm-hmm. So most of the time you can. You can,
yeah.
If it depends what you have. I mean, you can bring your own laptop in. You just make a dupe off your CDR.
They can dupe them in the research room.
Yeah.
Right.
For most things, obviously, some things you can't. But for most things, you can.
Yeah.
Hi.
I'm a naive and aging record collector. What is the relationship between what you hold, what you process, and what's at the Culpeper facility?
Well, the Library of Congress. We have a completely different mission. All of our stuff comes from federal agencies, so we don't take personal, you couldn't donate stuff to the National Archives. It would have to come through a federal agency. We have scheduled records, so we know that we're going to get certain groups of records from certain agencies at certain times, but we can't demand any records from any agencies, as Dick Cheney well knows that we tried that and that didn't work at all. So we can't demand any records from any agencies. So it's really, we can sort of specify how, to some degree, we want those records. But it's a completely different collecting mission that we have that the Library of Congress has. We are only federal agency material.
Well, why would any federal agency have spending its time on music
recording? Well, the Voice of America is part of the USIA,
yes.
Thank you.
Or USIS.
United States Information Service, thank you. We're interested in those recordings not because of the music contained in them, but because of Willis Conover, who was a federal employee. So we don't hold copyright over that music, but we're interested in what he's saying in between. And the Jazz Hour, and y'all probably know this much better than I do, but it didn't play in the United States. It played overseas. And he has this lovely, Willis Conover, the announcer, has this lovely cadence, and he speaks like this. And I think part of that was to help people for whom English was not their native language to be able to understand what he's saying. So our interest is really in what he's saying and not the music.
Can you talk a little bit about how you coordinate the workflow between your preservation masters that you're creating and the access copies that you're creating? At one point you implied they were kind of different.
Well, now any reference work that comes down, which is mostly on quarter-inch tape, we make a preservation copy. Oh, my God, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know what's the black hole that PD Aerial is.
And that automatically goes on to our network. So we were going back to these old preservation projects and getting that information off the CDRs. But now it is standard practice to make your preservation copy, then your 4416-bit for access.
No, we still generate those on the fly. We have two basic workflows, right? We have our reference stuff that comes through requests from the reading room, which could be a mix of anything, and then we also have a standing queue of preservation work that's determined with the custodial units and this complicated risk assessment. So now pretty much anything that comes in, well, anything that comes in, I shouldn't qualify that, anything that comes in gets a 9624 copy made of it. We generate then our access copy off that, which we burn to CDR and send up to the reading room. We don't retain that copy because we have nowhere really to put it. All of our preservation files get sent off to the SAN, which is a managed storage, which we have access to, but it's not, it's kind of a dark storage. You know, it's not something we're going to go in and pull it off. Before this past year, they didn't retain any files, right? Any file that came down, they just made a 4416 file and tossed it, right? So, and if that same request came down a week later, they did it again. So we thought, that doesn't make a lot of sense. So we've made the decision just to retain our access copies at this time. The thought process is that when stuff goes into ERA, you know, way down the line, that's going to generate those automatic those copies on the fly. And what format that's going to be, we don't really know.
One more.
I'll ask in the back because, sorry. See, this is two people. But anyway, go ahead.
Can you elaborate a little bit on your quality control? Like how many of the files are listened to, how much of the files, what
100% of our files are listened to. Yeah, we do a round robin QC, so somebody checks somebody else's files. So we listen to absolutely all of our files, the beginning, the middle, and the end, for just a couple of seconds. Mm-hmm. We also do a visual check. We now also just started using Dobbin. So all of our files will get a 100% integrity check and quality control check. Done?
Let's thank Kate and Jessica again.
Thank you. Thank you.